This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Peter Dinklage, is best known for his starring role in the independent film The Station Agent. He played a man who feels shut out by others because he's a dwarf. Dinklage is 4.5 feet tall. He had a very funny scene in the Will Ferrell movie, Elf. His new film, Find Me Guilty, is a departure from roles that focus on his size. He plays the lead defense attorney, Ben Clandis, in the trial of the Lucchese crime family. Against his recommendation, one of the 20 defendants, played by Vin Diesel, insists on representing himself. The movie is based on transcripts from the Lucchese trial, which lasted 21 months between 1987 and 88. Here's Dinklage making his opening statements to the jury.
I have the fate of Carlo Mascarpone in my hands. There he is, sitting near his brother Gino. They didn't join the Lucchese family because they already had one. The family created by Mr. and Mrs. Mascarpone. It's called biology. You'll hear a lot about my client's flamboyant lifestyle. His wife, Rosalind, sits in this courtroom, married 17 years, 4 children. That's a lifestyle. He goes to St. Lucie's Church. His wife teaches CCD. That's a lifestyle. Many of these defendants are related, some are friends or neighbors that have known each other since playing Little League baseball together. That's a lifestyle. They are a family. Not the kind of family the government talks about. They would twist it. They would make it evil. But all we're asking for, ladies and gentlemen, is to let justice be done, though the heavens may fall. Thank you.
I asked Peter Dinklage how he prepared for his role in Find Me Guilty.
A couple of years ago, I had served on a jury for a murder case, actually, and we found the kid not guilty, and I kind of loosely based my defense attorney on this defense attorney that this young man had, court-appointed attorney, and he was so good, and he was so persuasive, and almost like an actor. There's not much difference, I think, besides their knowledge of the law between an actor and a lawyer when it comes to presenting their case in front of a jury. They can become showmen. And sometimes playing a lawyer, you feel like you're overacting. But that's kind of what they do. And remembering this guy really helped me. And so that was sort of the research I had done.
Now, how'd you get the part in the film?
Sidney Lumet had seen a movie I did called The Station Agent. And he really liked that film and the job I did with that. So he was kind enough to offer me the role, which I didn't even read the script when he offered it to me, and I said yes, because it's Sidney Lumet. You don't really turn down Sidney Lumet if you're an actor. He's the greatest actor's director. He understands actors, and you rehearse for a couple weeks before the cameras roll, and he makes you feel very well prepared as an actor.
The only reference in the movie that I can think of to your height is at one point while addressing the jury, you stand on a little box to,
right,
to lift you up a little bit. So was the role written specifically for you?
No.
Or for
somebody my size?
Yeah.
No,
mm-hmm.
No, not at all. That was Sidney. That was Sidney's idea. But I love about the film is it doesn't address it. You know, I mean, it does and it doesn't, which is so true to life. And I think with the thing with the, that was Sidney's idea to wheel out this podium. But like I was saying before about the sort of the drama of it all, and to sort of, I think that was Sidney's intention to sort of have this almost. It gave Clandis a little bit more power in a way, and a little bit more persuasiveness, and maybe even a little sympathy. Which you utilize all of that. Lawyers utilize everything at their disposal to gain the sympathy of the jury, especially in a criminal case like this.
Was it refreshing for you to get a role that wasn't built around your size?
Always. I mean, I don't want to be in denial about roles that are written for my size and everything, because that's important too. I mean, a good role is all about the writing and who's there to direct you and guide you through it. Obviously, a movie like The Station Agent dealt with it, but it didn't hit you over the head with it. It's only part of who a character is, just like it's a part of who I am as a person, but it's not everything. And I think the fault of a lot of writing is, with scripts I've read that I don't end up doing, is it's the entire character. Everything, every other line is referring to the size, or everybody's referring around, the other characters are always referring to the size of the person. And that's just not good writing. That just doesn't happen, you know. It's once in a while something will come up and on a day-to-day basis, but that's the more realistic version of what life as a short-statured person is.
Well, in The Station Agent, which you starred in, you played a man who inherits an abandoned station agent house on an abandoned railroad line, and you decide
right.
to move into it. And you're so lonely and withdrawn, largely mm-hmm. because of your size in the film,
mm-hmm.
that it makes you feel different from everyone else. And after you've removed
right.
yourself to this, like, isolated, abandoned place,
mm-hmm.
you end up making actually really close friends from nearby
yeah.
who have their own issues that have left them feeling lonely. And
right, right.
And disaffected.
That's the, yeah.
yeah.
Tom McCarthy wrote the script. That's sort of his – he illustrated that so well, so subtly. And, yeah, we had a great time making that movie.
Now, you say that you don't like the kind of role where every line is about your height, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I want to play a line – like, it's a couple of lines
mm-hmm.
from The Station Agent. And I'd like to play this, like, short scene and then tell me what you like or don't like about the scene and what made you – you know, comfortable about doing it. I should say that your character in this, in the outside world, is always, people are always just saying exactly the wrong thing and mocking him. Kids call him sneezy, and people meet him
mm-hmm.
and they go, DePlane, DePlane.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is one of the friends that he's made. This is like the hot dog guy who runs the stand right outside of
okay.
your home.
Okay.
And he's talking to you about really personal stuff. So
mm-hmm.
here's that little clip.
Okay.
Can I ask you a personal question?
Sure.
You've had sex, right?
Yes.
With a regular size chick?
Yeah. With a regular size chick.
You ever had it with someone your own size?
No.
Do you wanna?
I don't want to talk about this, Joe.
Why?
I just don't.
Peter Dinklage, what works about that scene for you, and did anything about it make you uncomfortable?
Well, yeah, what I loved, and especially what Bobby Cannavale did, what he brought to it, it was almost like aggressive, his questioning, and I just love how Bobby plays that scene. It really helped me, like, get uncomfortable, actually. No, not just the way it was written, but how Bobby sort of forced these answers out of me, his character. And, you know, that's something that, I mean, Tom and I had a lot of long talks about, you know, stuff related to my size and the day-to-day issues, and he used that in the script, and it was really interesting working that way.
Is this the kind of question people actually ask you? inappropriate people who shouldn't be asked, people who don't know you well enough to ask anything so presumptuous.
Right. Well, what I find is that scene is, it should be a little uncomfortable, but it's also really important. I think it really brings those two characters closer together, because it's sort of, it's an honesty that Bobby's character had, Joe has, that he's very forthright and doesn't see anything really wrong about asking me those questions, as a lot of people who are very politically correct or something would. And it's, the question is, what's worse, being sort of forthright and not seeing anything wrong about asking questions like that, or being sort of politically correct and very reserved? And I think being very reserved about stuff in life in general, not even stuff with people's differences, can be damaging, being too reserved. I mean, like, when I'm walking down the street and a child points at me and questions who I am, and a mother or father tells them to look the other way, I don't find that to be healthy at all. I because those people are going to grow up to be sort of people who look away, you know, and that's just, you know, there comes a point where it's let somebody be curious, and if they're, if it comes, you know, when it's coming from the right place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think with a character like Joe, and with stuff I've dealt with friends in my own personal life, honesty is and some forth, being forthright can be really healthy for a relationship.
I want to play another scene, and this is a kind of famous scene from the Will Ferrell comedy Elf. And again, this is another scene that's about your size. Mm-hmm. And this is, it's a scene at a kind of business meeting. You're an author. You're at the publishing house, and there's a bunch of people sitting around the table. One of them is Will Ferrell's father. In the middle mm-hmm. of the meeting, Will Ferrell
James,
walks in.
James Caan.
Yes. And in the middle of the meeting, Will Ferrell walks in, sees you sitting at the table, and assumes you're an elf.
Right.
I didn't know you had elves working here.
Boy, you're hilarious, my friend.
He doesn't. Get back to the story, please.
So, on the cover above the title.
Does Santa know that you left the workshop?
You know, we're all laughing our heads off.
Did you have to borrow a reindeer to get down here?
Buddy, go back to the basement.
Hey, Jackweed, I get more action in a week than you've had your entire life. I've got houses in L.A., Paris, and Vail.
Oh.
Each one of them with a 70-inch plasma screen. So I suggest you wipe that stupid smile off your face before I come over there and smack it off. You feeling strong, my friend? Call me Elf one more time.
He's an angry elf.
And that's a little scuffle as you beat up Will Ferrell.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have to beat up Will Ferrell.
I mean, that's a funny scene, and it's a scene, and you have a right. couple of scenes like this in movies mm-hmm. where you play the dwarf who's really annoyed at all the stereotypes and really annoyed at how people see him, and you're really funny about it.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, I like that stuff because it kind of turns it on its head. I love comedy, and I really do have a sense of humor about myself, or I try to, at least on good days. And obviously with that, a sense of humor about my size. And movies like Elf and Living in Oblivion do as well. And if it's like that, then I really have no issue with it at all. I find it to be fun to be a part of. And I love turning things on their head and flipping them around like that, which is what these movies do. And Will Ferrell, I think, is a comic genius. So,
well, you mentioned Living in Oblivion, and that's an independent film that mm-hmm. Steve Buscemi starred in as a director.
Right, a film within a film. Yeah,
yeah, and there's a great.
That was
scene.
Actually the first. I got really lucky. That was my first film that I was ever in. And
oh, really?
I was actually spoiled. I thought they would all be as good as that, and they aren't. But you're lucky to be a part of something like that.
should we play your scene from this film?
Sure, if you want.
Okay, so this is Living in Oblivion.
Going down memory lane.
Memory lane. And Steve Buscemi plays an independent film director, not a very good mm-hmm. one. And mm-hmm. this is like his big dream, surreal dream sequence. And Catherine right. Keener is the actress in the sequence.
Right.
And then there's like lots of smoke.
And
then you walk in.
And a powder blue tuxedo I'm wearing.
Yes, you walk in a powder blue tuxedo.
Mm-hmm.
And
bad prom date.
Yeah, and you really hate the scene, and you let Steve Buscemi know it, and here's
right.
what he has to say.
Right.
Look, Tito, it's not that big of a deal. It's a dream. Strange things happen in a dream. All I want you to do is laugh. Why is that such a problem for you?
Why does it have to be a dwarf?
What?
Why does my character have to be a dwarf?
It doesn't have to be a dwarf.
Then why is he? Is that the only way you can make this a dream? Put a dwarf in it?
No, Tito.
Have you ever had a dream with a dwarf in it? Do you know anyone who's had a dream with a dwarf in it? No! I don't even have dreams with dwarves in them. The only place I've seen dwarves in dreams is in stupid movies like this. Oh, make it weird. Put a dwarf in it. Everyone will go, whoa, whoa, whoa. There, it must be a f-ing dream. There's a f-ing dwarf in it. Well, I'm sick of it. You can take this dream sequence and shove it up your
That's angry.
That's Steve Buscemi and my guest Peter Dinklage.
So
in a scene from Living in Oblivion. That's a very funny scene, and I'm wondering. Well, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. No, go ahead, please.
No, you.
I hadn't heard that in a very long time. But there's also this weird thing like about anger, about angry dwarves. People always think like dwarves are very angry people, and I also just like that about that scene because I'm actually angry. yeah, it's another stereotype, I guess. Although, you know, sometimes I get mad.
Whenever I hear that scene, I think of Twin Peaks.
Yeah, I mean, God, that's what I was afraid of because I love David Lynch so much. And the stuff Michael Anderson did in Twin Peaks, the backward talking and the dancing. But, yeah, you can't help but make a comparison between those two. It's more just frustration about if you need an image to be weird, put somebody in it, like a dwarf or something.
Your first film was Living in Oblivion, which we heard a scene mm-hmm. from. So mm-hmm. What was the audition like for your role? Because, you know, you played a dwarf who's cast in this surreal dream scene. Mm-hmm. So what was the casting call like for that?
I read for Tom DiCillo, the
Did
the
he know you
director.
Already?
No, actually the funny story is I was working in an office job at the time, and he called me, Tom DiCillo did personally, to invite me to come and read, and I thought it was, he called me at this office. I was in a cubicle, miserable, working a temp job, and I answered the phone, and he introduced himself, and I laughed, and I was like, yeah, come on, man, don't bother me at work, and I hung up on him, thinking it was a friend of mine, because, you know, friends, we have a tendency to you know, mess with each other's heads. And as soon as I hung up on him, I kind of froze. My hand was frozen to the phone, and I was thinking that didn't really sound like anybody I know. But thank God he called back, and I apologized to him. And I got the role, so it worked out well.
Lucky he called back.
It's not really a funny story, Terry. I'm sorry.
It could have been a tragic story.
It could have been a tragic story. Jeez. Based on that one, I could have probably still been in that cubicle today.
So did that movie change your life?
Mm-mm. No, not... I don't believe in big breaks. I think it's a myth. I mean, there's roles that you do that really affect a lot of people and lead to other work, but... I did that movie, and then I went back to working part-time jobs, and you know, I didn't get another movie after that movie for about 8 months, and that was a brief role in some straight-to-video movie, and it was tough going for many years. I wasn't able to really pay the rent as a working actor until I was about 30. So no, all through my 20s, and I made that movie probably when I was about 25. So for about 5 years there, I had to, after Living in Oblivion, I struggled along and, you know, working odd jobs and doing plays with friends downtown and occasionally appearing in some movie, but, you know, having one couple scenes in an indie film, you know, doesn't break the bank.
So now we heard a couple of scenes in which you play a dwarf who's really angry and sarcastic about the way somebody sees him.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever in real life been that angry and sarcastic person in response to somebody saying something really stupid to you?
Yes. I mean, we all have our bad days where our patience is not even, doesn't even exist. Yeah, you could catch me on a bad day. And I mean, it was different when I was younger. You know, as a teenager, I was pretty, you know, surly, wearing a lot of black and you know, hating the world and all of that it stands for. And it's sort of heightened a little bit if you're, you know, 4.5 feet tall, that sort of anger. But, yeah, I mean, I still will have bad days where if somebody does a laugh or a point and I just confront them and sort of just say to them, really, does that really make you a better person or something, doing that? You know, I try not to because that's just going to put me in a worse state of mind. And it's not your issue, it's theirs. And I just try to have a sense of humor about who I am. And the older you get, like anybody, you just sort of let that stuff roll off your back.
Well, now, like, say you're at the airport and somebody's staring at you, it's probably because you're in movies, not because of your height.
That's the rationale I use now. They're not looking at me because I'm 4.5 feet tall. They're looking at me because I'm a famous, famous movie star. No. Yeah. You know, I don't know.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Peter Dinklage plays the lead defense attorney in the new film Find Me Guilty, directed by Sidney Lumet.